Blog Talk Radio.
Another episode of Your World News. I'm your host, Solomon. Thank you for joining us today on this Monday, December 14th, I believe it is, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, I believe today is the 14th of December, 2009. And we have another great episode for you today. And if you don't know, if this is your first time tuning into Your World News, this is a radio program that is the antithesis to what you might expect to hear on any corporate-dominated media outlet, whether it may be radio or television or, I guess, even print when you look at some of the corporate-dominated print media that is out there. And so this is a place where you're going to hear news and critical analysis and, quite frankly, interviews with guests like the one we have today that you simply will not find on or I would say most likely, definitely not going to find on any corporate media outlet. Today we're going to have one of our favorite guests, and that's Keith Harmon Snow. He's one of our favorite guests because of the great work that he does to put things into the proper context, to lend itself to ending a lot of the social injustice and plundering and neo-colonization that is going on in Mama Africa. And so today we'll be talking about a number of things, including Rwanda, Congo, Uganda, and also AFRICOM, African Command. And so with that in mind, I want to kind of set you, the viewer, up, or the, I should say the listener. I don't know if anyone's viewing me. I guess with all this high-powered technology that the government has, maybe they are viewing me right now, but that's okay. I've got the Your World listening audience with me. I know you guys got my back. And so I want to kind of set the stage and introduce one of the topics we'll be discussing today with this news bit that is courtesy of Black Agenda Report and Brother Glenn Ford. So I'll see you on the other side of this. And once we get on the other side, we should be joined by Keith Harmon Snow, who will be calling in from Massachusetts, and we're going to get into a very lively, spirited conversation. If you like to call into the show, you can do so. The call-in number is 347-945-5191. That's 347-945-5191. I'll see you on the other side.
AFRICOM, the U.S. military's Africa Command, has forged deep ties to a growing number of militaries on the African continent. And contrary to popular belief and official U.S. proclamations, AFRICOM has established a base on the African continent, The base is located in Djibouti, the former French colony in the Horn of Africa on Somalia's northern border. The huge American base in Djibouti, from which the United States coordinates military actions in the region, including operations in Somali territory, is under AFRICOM command. It is therefore a fiction to maintain that AFRICOM has no bases on African soil. The U.S. Africa Command has simply opened no new bases or relocated its official headquarters from Germany, a move that might ignite a wave of protest on the continent. But the Americans may not have to stage a ribbon-cutting ceremony for a formal AFRICOM headquarters to accomplish the militarization of Africa under U.S. domination. A massive U.S.-led military exercise is just winding down in the West African nation of Gabon. Dubbed Africa Endeavor, the training mission involves military units from nearly 30 African countries under the auspices of the Americans, the U.S. Africa Command. It is by far the largest joint exercise with African militaries and the third in so many years. The first two involve South Africa and Nigeria. The African-American who commands AFRICOM, General William Ward, claims the latest exercise in Gabon, which began last week and ends October 8th, is designed to improve the ability of armed forces from various African nations to communicate with each other in peacekeeping operations. They are, without a doubt, learning how to communicate with and operate alongside the United States military. The current focus of U.S. AFRICOM activities appears to revolve around preparing African troops to operate under American command and control procedures. In early September, 50 Ugandan military officers were sent to the U.S. military base in Djibouti for training. A spokesman for the Ugandan Armed Forces told reporters that the objective was to train Africans to fight with international forces. That is clearly a euphemism for operating alongside the Americans. If the U.S. can turn the militaries of sovereign African nations into appendages of American forces operating under American command and control, then there is no need to draw attention to the U.S. military presence in Africa by formally designating an AFRICOM headquarters in, say, Kampala, Uganda, or Monrovia, Liberia. Once the U.S. has subverted the officer corps of Africa's armies and made them dependent on U.S. equipment, procedures, and logistics, American military domination becomes a fait accompli. For its part, the U.S. Africa Command says the military exercises are meant to develop a standard procedure for the operation of an all-African standby force under the African Union. What they are in fact creating is a force that cannot operate without the assistance of the Americans. And of course, such a force could never resist the Americans in battle. The U.S. will never give Africans the tools to defend themselves from the Americans. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to www.blackagendareport.com.
And without further ado, that was Glenn Ford, and I can see that we have Brother Keith Harmon Snow, who I introduced to you guys before we went into Glenn Ford's piece on AFRICOM. Keith Harmon Snow is a very good friend of Your World News. He's a comrade of mine, and he's just been doing tremendous support. And I want to put this out there before we even get the interview started. He needs, because the work that Keith is doing is not ever going to make its way into corporate media, whether it's the New York Times, whether it's MSNBC, or whether it's some corporate radio station, because he exposes people in his fight to seek justice for our brothers and sisters throughout sub-Saharan Africa and throughout other parts of the world that he's done tremendous work. But he needs our help. He needs in-kind donations from listeners like yourself, from listeners like myself, to be able to fuel the work that he's doing, to be able to travel and to embed himself into whatever country, whatever community he's doing this work. He's not one of these corporate media you know, talking heads that, you know, if you look at the corporate media, they don't have much, they don't have very many correspondents in some of the places that they do their reporting from. And so they report from afar. But Keith goes into, he'll go into Congo, he'll go into Gabon, he'll go into Southeast Asia, he'll go into Ethiopia, and he'll do that reporting, and he'll come back with the stuff that he researched, with the interviews that of folks on the ground that he spoke to, and he'll bring it back to us so that we can put them into a deeper context so that we can take that information and we can do something with it and we can fight on behalf of those folks who are, quite frankly, getting killed with our tax dollars, you know, by way of AFRICOM, by way of these multinational corporations that have found themselves throughout North America as well as throughout Europe. And so please, you know, I'm going to be giving this website a couple of times, but his website is All Things Pass, A-L-L, Things, P-H-I-N-G-S, Pass.com. That is his website. You can go there and you can give donations on PayPal. And so without further ado, Keith is on the line right now. And Keith, I don't know if I think you heard Glenn Ford's piece, and I don't know if you want to kind of start off there, introduce yourself, and we'll hit the ground running.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on. The truth is the situation in Congo is pretty bad, of course, and it's true that there isn't anybody that's going to publish this in the mainstream, and I think people need to appreciate that there's, for example, a major campaign of disinformation out there, and this is just one of the particular fronts of disinformation that we could talk about, being the subject of the war in the Congo. But, of course, there's plenty of disinformation about Afghanistan and Iraq and the CIA Predator drones, the CIA or the Predator drones. They're both separate entities, of course. So there's a lot of information that people aren't getting, and people just need to really take a new step in understanding the extent of this deception that's going on with the American media. So,
right. So
I can launch right into Congo anytime or, you know.
Yeah, I think
that'd
be
warm me up if you want.
No, I think that'd be a great point of entry because, you know, we're going to, talking about the Congo, we're obviously going to get into the talk of the drones and AFRICOM. But I'd like to start off with this piece that you just did, this tremendous piece, this 23-page report that you just put out within the last week, Belgian paratroopers to crush rising Congo rebellion. And it gets into stuff that, you know, I had only heard pretty much the tip of the iceberg before, but your report was like, not only was it detailing, but I can't think of the right word, but it angered me. It was upsetting. It was to hear about what, you know, certain things that are going on by these proxy militaries that the U.S. is using, such as the military of Uganda and Rwanda, to do this bidding. And these folks are continued to be supported and propped up by the U.S. But if you could just start off with what precipitated you to write this report. What is the report about? Because I'm sure most of our listeners haven't read this report as of yet. What, you know, if you can sum up what in as many words as you want, what this report was about, and what is it, some of the things that it exposed?
Sure. Well, I traveled in the Congo the first time. I traveled around the perimeter of Congo in 97 and then again in 2000, but actually in the country the first time was in 2004. And the first place I went in Congo was actually the area that my story talks about, which is the province of Equateur. Equateur is a very large piece of the Congo in the, I'd say it's the size of, you know, it's bigger than New York combined with parts of New England. And it's in the far west of the Congo on the opposite side of what has been the ongoing conflict in the Congo, which has been in the news, which is the war in the east of Congo on the border with Rwanda and Uganda. So this outbreak of a rebellion in western Congo was very surprising. It sort of came out of nowhere, and suddenly there was a little bit of noise leaking through the system to me about something happening in the western Congo. And so I started scanning the news reports and found out there was absolutely nothing reported in the news about it except this very short little BBC or Reuters or Associated Press reports about how the people in this area of Dongo, it's called Dongo in the western Equateur province, how they were fighting over fishing rights. Well, something didn't add up, of course, so I started to look into it, and then I got some of my contacts in Kinshasa, the capital city of the Congo, to start sending me information, and it turns out that it's a massive rebellion against the current government of the Congo, partly or mostly because he's completely sold out, the President Kabila and the people close to President Kabila has completely sold out to multinational corporations and mining interests, and including the United Nations, which has become another combatant in the war in the Congo. And he's teamed up with the governments of Rwanda and Uganda and with AFRICOM, the Pentagon's Africa Command. And this is to completely dominate the Congo against the people, against the wishes or the rights or the economic prosperity of the people, yet again, after more than 150 years of absolute exploitation of these people in the Congo. So the rebellion up in Ecuador was sparked by a little conflict over fishing rights, but then the government sent in some troops and fanned the flames of that conflict, and it blew up, and is currently now a massive ongoing battle in the Ecuador region across very big part of the rainforest there, the Congo River Basin, and it's completely in whiteout. You will see small reports about these how it started out as a thing about fishing rights, and actually the BBC and the Associated Press and Reuters have all gone out of their way to say right up front in these little stories that it has nothing to do with the war in the East. Well, that's a total lie, and it's very interesting that they would point that out. So, you know, just to back up a little bit for your listeners, give a little bit of the history here. The Congo was first exploited under King Leopold from 1885 to 1908, and Leopold sent in this New York Post journalist, Henry Morton Stanley. And Stanley is sometimes known as the guy who met Livingstone, and they shook hands in the middle of nowhere and said, "Dr. Livingstone, I presume." Well, that's a bunch of white supremacy. The fact is that Henry Morton Stanley was King Leopold's agent, and he set up the red rubber trade, which means the blood rubber trade, to get out ivory and rubber. And they did this behind a humanitarian front, claiming that they were stopping the Arab slave trade. And so from 1885 until 1908, King Leopold in Belgium took control of the Congo amidst massive, massive loss of life. 10 million people, it's believed, were killed under the Leopoldian bloodshed organized by Henry Morton Stanley, where they would cut people's hands off, for example, if they didn't produce enough of the rubber quota. And this was all along this region of Ecuador and over into the other province of Oriental on the eastern side of Congo. So it was a huge, huge trade coming down the Congo River in rubber and ivory in the beginning. And so by 1920, in 1908, because King Leopold was exposed by some great African-American, the real first human rights investigators in the world were African-Americans who went into the Congo in the early 1900 to 1908 period. After they exposed Leopold, then Belgium took control of the Congo Free State, and from 1908 until 1960 exploited it massively again under colonialism, the Belgian Congo. And the big profits there were to be made out of the mining, which would be cobalt, copper, more recently niobium, tantalum, and selenium and germanium, these rare earth minerals that are used in electronics. But back in the 1920s time frame, it was gold, diamonds, cobalt, and copper, and uranium. Actually, by 1935, the uranium that came out of a place called Chinkalobwe in the Congo was used at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, two very familiar names. So the mining from 1920 until 1960 was organized by the Belgians with American and Israeli, and Israel, by the way, was very deep in the Congo from the 1935 until definitely till 1960, and then especially after that had major interest in the Congo. So after so-called independence in 1960, we saw a new kind of exploitation taking place where the Belgian colonial establishment broke down because Belgium sort of abandoned the Congo and at the same time sent in capitalism in a new way, and predatory capitalism really took over in the Congo. And there it was just absolute rapacious greed hidden by the Western media system. And so the story from 1960 to 1997 under this guy, President Mobutu, who was always, if you see anything about Mobutu in the media today, it's summed up like the Mobutu era, these 40 years of absolute dictatorship are summed up like this. Mobutu was a bad guy. He took a lot of money and he sent it to Swiss banks. He pillaged the country and broke it all apart and made the people suffer. He's gone. We should have done something about it, but we didn't, and it's time to move on. That's, in fact, exactly what Hillary Clinton said. Well, the same people who plundered the Congo under Mobutu some of them are operating in the Congo today, and they have been. They did under Mobutu, and they continue to after Mobutu, and they're connected to some of the power struggle there now. So from 1996, the United States invaded the Congo with its proxy armies from Rwanda and Uganda. And so began the current phase of Congo wars. And there was a period from 96 until 97 when they threw out Mobutu. He eventually, or soon after that, died of prostate cancer, and then replaced the government. And then the guy they put in power, this guy named Laurent Kabila, he threw out Bechtel Corporation, who wanted to completely rebuild the country, and he threw out the IMF, and he threw out the World Bank, and he told the Rwandans and the Ugandans to go home. Well, Bill Clinton didn't like that, and neither did a guy named Walter Kansteiner, and neither did a guy named Maurice Tebelspan, and these are the white agents of power behind the current ongoing conflict in the Congo. So they didn't like that, so they sent the Rwandans and the Ugandans back into the Congo from the east, and so began the second phase of war from 1998 until 2003, which continues to this day, you know, boiling, simmering, boiling in the eastern provinces of Kivu, the two Kivus, South and North Kivu, on the borders of Rwanda and Uganda, and the northern east, northeastern province of Oriental, which is right on the border of Uganda. So in the 1997, 98, 99, 2000 timeframe, the Rwandans, with these players from the United States, especially this guy Walter Kansteiner, who I'm going to use as an example, they started plundering these resources in the eastern Congo, especially Columbium Tantalite, which is used for our cell phones, our Sony PlayStations, and laptop computers, and a lot of other things that the Department of Defense is making that we'll never see, or we may, you know, someday see, but we aren't seeing yet. And the reason this raw material is very important, this mineral is very important, is because it creates these small capacitors, charge storage devices, which make it possible for us to carry around a cell phone which holds a charge for, you know, a certain amount of time. That's miniaturization, is because of these raw materials coming out of the Congo. And then there's cobalt, and then there's diamonds, and then there's gold, and these involve people like George Bush Sr., who was an advisor for a company called Barrick Gold. And I could name a lot of names. Bill Clinton's connection to the diamonds are connected to this guy, Maurice Tebelspan. He's, as far as I'm concerned, the number one agent of devastation in the Congo from 1960 until 1998, and he's certainly involved today. And this is diamonds, and this is also, you know, the assassination of Patrice Lumumba, I think, can be directly connected to Maurice Tebelspan. So none of this, of course, is in the media, or if it is, it's summarized, as I said, about Mobutu. He, CIA backed him, he took all the money and ran, and he's dead now. End of story. So back to the war in the Congo. From 2001 to the present, it's been boiling in the east, and that's because Rwanda and Uganda are involved in the Congo with the goal of conquering the eastern Congo. And the way they conquer, the way that we conquer things in the world, it's the way the Western American European system conquers people anywhere, is to go in, devastate the people, basically depopulate the land, seize it, and move the people off that live there, you know, the so-called the indigenous people, move them off to the shittiest bits of real estate somewhere else. And then, of course, they die of something we would call genocide. So this process began in the Americas. It began with the Spaniards and the conquistadors, and that's exactly what's going on in the Congo, except today the participants include the Rwandan government, backed by the Africa Command of the Pentagon, and the government of Uganda. And, of course, these two governments are the Pentagon's most powerful governments in Africa at the moment. For example, under the previous government in Rwanda from 1973 until 1994, the army in 1990 or 1992 was about 7,000 troops under the previous government. Today, there's over 70,000 troops in Rwanda, backed by the Africa Command, the Pentagon. So from now I'm going to say the Pentagon, but I'm talking about AFRICOM, the Africa Command. So the Pentagon has built up this tiny little state of Rwanda, which is about the size of Vermont, into the most powerful army on the continent. And that army is devastating the Congo. It's done a nasty job of wiping out people in Rwanda, which is going on to this very moment. And it's sent troops into Somalia, Uganda, and Sudan. In fact, the Darfur region has got about 4 to 5,000 Rwandan troops in Darfur right now. And what's going on in Darfur is exactly what happened in Rwanda from 1990 to 1994, and that is where we backed the current players, which would be Paul Kagame, the current president of Rwanda, to overthrow the government of the former government of Rwanda and seize control of the country. And that's what happened in Rwanda from 1990 to 1994. and using Uganda and Rwanda as our major military players now, the United States and its allies, which are, you know, different interests from the United Kingdom, from Belgium, from France, and from Israel in particular. Oh, Germany is a big player in the Congo also. Now are, you know, expanding control by depopulating the region. And so what happened in Rwanda from 1994 was to massively depopulate Rwanda, and to blame it all on the people that fought back and call it genocide, whereas the government that's in power today is also responsible for genocide, but not a single individual in that government has been tried for genocide. So there's the basic background. And to sum it up this way, what's going on in the Congo today involves these, you know, big diamond interests from Israel and the United States competing against each other. Some of them are closer to the Bush families, and some of them are closer to the Clinton or the Democrats families, and others are interests are involved in the other raw materials, the oil, the natural gas under Lake Kivu. And so it's big business. And another sector that makes a lot of money off the bloodshed in the Congo, of course, is the so-called humanitarian sector. So Doctors Without Borders and Care International, all of their connections to the corporations that fund them and back them, and the pharmaceutical companies that provide the drugs, sometimes testing them on Africans. This is what's going down in Central Africa. It's not what we see in the New York Times. So maybe I'll take a breath and see if you have a question to clarify something.
Yeah, one of the clarifications, you mentioned Rwanda several times, and you know, a lot of folks, especially here in the West, think they understand the whole context in which the genocide that happened in Rwanda in the 90s about that. But there's a more deep and more nefarious story behind that genocide. And I was wondering if you could touch on the real genocide in Rwanda versus the genocide that a lot of Westerners think based on the false information that they've been fed.
Sure. There's a book out on the market. I've seen a couple different versions of this book. It's a big, fat, red and black book put out by a printer called Disinformation. I think it's different, Disinformation Press. And what's significant about this book is the title. And that's exactly what I want to make a point about with respect to your question about Rwanda. Everything You Know Is Wrong. That's the title of this book, and that's the title of what should be the title of people should apply to their thinking about Rwanda. Everything You Know Is Wrong. Because virtually everything that's been presented by the Western press has been presented in what we would call, in basketball, a full-court press, where everybody's producing the same thing at the same time, moving down the court and determined to get the basket, which in this case is to convince the American public or the English-speaking world that there was a genocide in Rwanda, that it happened in 100 days from April 6th to July of 1994, that the Tutsi people were the victims and the Hutu people were the killers, that the Hutu spontaneously arose in this well-organized genocide and started massacring people left and right from April 6th until July of 1994, because that's what these people in Rwanda, Congo, and Uganda, and Liberia do. They're tribal. They're savages. It's ethnic conflict. We don't, of course, have ethnic conflict in Iraq or in Afghanistan or in Honduras or when the United States fights against its own friends. Those are not called ethnic conflicts. Those are called war. So what happened in the press's words with Rwanda was it's an ethnic conflict between the Hutus and Tutsis, and that's those nasty people killing each other with machetes and hoes and axes, and it's brutal. And the photographs substantiated this. They began appearing in roughly April 6, 1994, and they came out every single day just about for the next 3 or 4 months, and it was just photographs of dead bodies withered in the sun, hacked apart with machetes, bloodshed, and again, what appeared to be meaningless tribal slaughter. That's exactly, by the way, what we're seeing with respect to Darfur over the last few years, is that we see dead people, and the people that are accused of killing those dead people are always the government of Sudan. There's never any mention of the rebels involved in the Darfur war. And it was the same with Rwanda. On October 1st, 1990, from Uganda, with American military support and British military support, the Rwandan Patriotic Front Army marched into Rwanda. They were so-called Tutsi refugees who'd been forced out of Rwanda over the previous period. And they were immediately called the Jews of Africa, and they were immediately cast as the victims. And they had a right to take over Rwanda against international law overthrow a government and assassinate the president. And that's basically what happened. And they were never stopped. No one challenged it because it was backed by the Pentagon and it was backed by the Western media. Instead of saying, well, why is this guy, President Javier Amana, who had been in power from 1973 until 1994, why was he being attacked? In October of 1990, instead, we saw him cast as the killers. The government of Rwanda was cast as the killers at the time, when in fact it was this invading rebel army. So from October 1990 until April 6 of 1994, the Rwandans, rebels, backed by the Pentagon, marched from Uganda into Rwanda, basically killing people left and right. They killed just about everybody in their path. They killed Tutsis, they killed Hutus, and they killed the indigenous Twa people. They did it in such a way that the atrocities were blamed on the opposite side. So they were blamed on the government of Rwanda. They were blamed on the Hutus. And today, the Hutus are demonized as, if you ask somebody about the Hutus and the genocide in Rwanda, people will universally say the Hutus committed genocide in Rwanda. And there won't be any discussion about whether that involves Hutus who are today 1 year old or Hutus who are today 99 years old. It doesn't matter. A Hutu is responsible for genocide. They've been universally dehumanized and accused of genocide. And this is what the mass hysteria has come to believe and what the mass media continues to project about Rwanda. Instead of the true story, the United States government overthrew the government of Rwanda from October 1990 until April 1994, and committed this double presidential assassination of both the presidents of Rwanda and Burundi on April 6, 1994, and then took over the country with the current government. And so today you see this guy, Paul Kagame, who led that double presidential assassination, who led the coup d'etat, who led the massacres of millions of people and organized this genocide, so-called genocide, because if we talk about genocide, we have to deconstruct it and find out what it means to talk about genocide in Rwanda. The people that organized it are the people in power today. And that's why you see them getting all these awards. Paul Kagame has gotten all kinds of awards from the international system. And anybody who has a thinking mind could ask themselves why a guy like Paul Kagame would be getting all these awards from people like George Bush and Bill Clinton and from people like that fanatical religious guy out in California whose name I can't think of in the moment. But
Rick Warren?
Rick Warren, exactly. I mean, there's a nasty piece of work. But people don't ask why, for example, President Obama, who was given the Nobel Peace Prize, stood up and started talking about how he justified our warmongering and our killing. I mean, the people that are doing the killing are being rewarded for it and giving awards. So people should understand that, and that's exactly what's happened with Paul Kagame. So on April 6, 1994, that's when the double presidential assassination took place. The two presidents of Rwanda and Burundi were killed on approach to the airport in Rwanda in a double presidential assassination with the support, it's believed with the support of the Central Intelligence Agency, and the people responsible today are in power in Rwanda. And from October 1990, as they marched into the country and started massacring and slaughtering people, they wiped out everybody in their path. Complete scorched earth policy against absolute, you know, against total villages, whole villages. And so the people who saw this bloodshed, they ran for their lives, and they ran into Rwanda seeking the security of their own government. And the government of Javier Amana from 1973 to 1994 was not a fantastically wonderful government, but compared to the atrocities that have been committed since, it was a wonderful government. It established the rule of law. And it created a growing economy in 1990, 91, until the international system came down on it. The IMF and the World Bank came down on it in 1990. And then these so-called rebels invaded from Uganda. And, of course, all of this revolves around the president of Uganda, President Museveni, who is an agent of American power in Uganda. And he's been, you know, a so-called democracy. He's been in power for more than 21 years as a one-party dictatorship. And Museveni, the president of Uganda, came to power under absolute terrorism as well. And we don't talk about what Museveni did in Rwanda. Instead, we get stuff like The Last King of Scotland, which is a Hollywood production about how the bloodshed in Uganda was committed under Idi Amin, this nasty dictatorship. We don't hear about Museveni because 1 + 1 = 2. The IMF plus the World Bank equals silence in the American media. You know, you've got big financial interests in Uganda. And the Pentagon has been backing Uganda significantly since Museveni took power in 1985. When Museveni did take power, one of his leading agents of atrocities was Paul Kagame, the current president of Rwanda. So if we go back to the subject of genocide in Rwanda, as Kagame and the RPF and the Ugandans moved in from Uganda into Rwanda, they committed these massive atrocities, and they forced millions of people off their land, as well as killing and killing and killing so many people. And they convinced the world that the people that were doing the killing were the government of Rwanda, and cast them as the killers instead of the victims, and that they were the victims. And so the media system didn't talk about these rebels, just as it doesn't talk about the rebels involved in Darfur in Sudan. So the genocide that occurred in Rwanda on April 6th, when the double presidential assassination occurred, there were all of these Hutu refugees, and there were plenty of Tutsis, because Kagame was killing Tutsis as well. Now, people say, well, if Kagame's a Tutsi and the Tutsis are in power and they stopped the genocide, well, that's a myth. They didn't stop any genocide at all. They committed genocide because they organized genocide against the Hutu people, but they also organized, they knew perfectly well that as they marched into Rwanda, the Tutsis and the Hutus who fled into the capital city and became refugees were going to fight back. Every evidence said, and that the Pentagon knew this perfectly well, everything said that there was going to be a massive cataclysm of violence, because the people that had been subject to this incredible nightmare of a war were going to fight back. And so after their president was killed, the people fought back, and they fought back by any means necessary. And that was not an organized genocide. It was genocide in the sense that an act of genocide is where someone commits an act of genocide against a certain ethnic group. So the Hutu people who fought back against Tutsis with hoes and with machetes, that was genocide in the sense that it was multiple countless acts of genocide. But the International Criminal Tribunal on Rwanda has not found a single person guilty of an organized conspiracy to commit genocide. The only people that have been tried are the former government officials, the ones that the United States has cast as the killers. And not one of them has been convicted of a conspiracy to commit genocide. In fact, in the last 3 months, three or four previous convictions were overturned by the International Criminal Tribunal on Rwanda, because it determined that there had been no justice in these cases against these top Hutu officials. So these guys that were formerly cast as genocidaires, or people who committed genocide in the French terminology, were suddenly exonerated by the International Criminal Tribunal in the last few months, and the charges were dismissed, and several of them were actually released. And the reason is because there was no hard evidence of a conspiracy to commit genocide. And it's been one massive victor's justice, an organized criminal tribunal, which is criminal in the sense that it's not justice in any sense of the word. It's organized by the United States, it's supported by Britain, it's supported by Israel, and it makes it look like there is justice in the world and that we're arresting and holding to account these people who commit genocide, when nothing of the sort is happening. We've got genocide going on in Afghanistan and Iraq today. We've still got targeted genocide against Native Americans, and we've still got an ongoing war against black people in the United States and brown people.
Yeah.
And so the idea that there's an international system that is just has to be upheld, and it's upheld by creating these so-called international tribunals, which then present this mythology about justice, which is just a travesty of justice. So there's never been a single trial or never been a single arrest of the people that actually had committed genocide on the other side. So the organization of genocide was by the Kagame government, the people in power today, and that's why they're getting all these awards. Because the system is trying to completely whitewash these stories that are coming out and cover them up, stories that I write, stories that the lawyers from the International Criminal Tribunal on Rwanda have published, stories of the former Rwandan rebels who defected from the government of Rwanda because it's such a nasty enterprise today, and they're trying to get their stories out. But the government of Rwanda, with the United States and Israeli and British support and the support of Germany, is hunting down these Rwandans everywhere and basically eliminating them, trying to silence the truth. But the fact is, both the court of Spain and the court of France have held these serious investigations where they've interviewed, they have all these testimonies, and they've collected all this evidence about who did the killing in Rwanda in 1990, 91, 92, 93, 94, and who were the victims. And to top it off, and they've actually issued indictments against the top 40 government officials, military officials in Rwanda today. So 40 of the top officials in the current Rwandan government are responsible for these nasty war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide, and they're running free in the world. And the two professors from the United States, from the University of Maryland, I believe, but I'm not sure, but it was Christian Davenport and another guy named Professor Stamm. These guys set out about 10 years ago to do a study on genocide in Rwanda. They created a project they called the Genodynamics Project. And they set off to just come up with an academic study about what really happened in Rwanda. They had no idea what they were going to find. They expected to find, evidence which supported the story that they'd heard in the media. What they found instead was something exactly opposite, and that is the people that did the killing are the people in power today. The people that did the majority of the killing are the people in power today. And they killed Hutus, and they killed Tutsis. And why did the Tutsis go around killing Tutsis? The answer is because the people that stayed in Rwanda after 1973, the Tutsis that stayed in Rwanda, it was a majority Hutu government. Most of the people were Hutus. The minority were the Tutsis. The people that stayed in Rwanda were distrusted by Kagame and his agents of assassination. When they entered as a rebel force in 1990, they started killing off these people that stayed behind because they said they can't trust them. And their goal from the very beginning, and this is what the Spanish court has established with its 40 indictments of the top Rwandan officials, the goal of the Rwandan Patriotic Front and Paul Kagame and these top officials from the very beginning was to eliminate as many people as possible in Rwanda. And that's exactly what happened. And, of course, it was called genocide, and they blamed it on the enemy. It was a war.
Keith, who are the just for listeners, the Interahamwe, who they may have heard mentioned a lot in Western press, and because I think they described them as a militia group of Hutu youth.
Sure. What was the Black Panther Party? The Interahamwe were like the Black Panther Party. Basically, they were they organized themselves early in 1994, or even earlier than that. But they didn't organize themselves to commit genocide. They organized themselves to defend the country against these invading armies. In fact, the Interahamwe, which is a Rwandan word for militia, it's got a different meaning. But anyway, it's basically a militia, a local militia like we have in Kansas, like we have in Texas, a bunch [S2]
Right. [S1]
Of people who get together with guns with some, patriotic mission or other, which can be sometimes good and not, but in the case of the American militias, I would call them not. But anyway, the militia in Rwanda was infiltrated by Kagame and infiltrated by the Rwandan Patriotic Front. So when April 6th came and people started to rise up and fight, some of these militias that did this killing were being controlled by the Rwandan Patriotic Front. And again, all of the killing was blamed on the enemy. You have to ask, what were the journalists who reported this stuff? How did they do it? How did they report the stories? They did it by reporting from behind the Rwandan Patriotic Front lines. They were working with the Rwandan Patriotic Front. They were working with the killers. And they were working with them, they were embedded with them the way that you would embed yourself as a journalist with the Pentagon. Now, the Pentagon doesn't let you see the atrocities that are being committed by American troops. And we're talking about massive atrocities in Afghanistan and Iraq. They don't let you see the mass murder of women and children. What they do is they sanitize the site after the killing. They bring in the press and they say, see what those nasty Taliban did.
Uh-huh.
Or see what those nasty Iraqi insurgents of the Shiite tribe did, those fucking Shiites.
Yeah.
So what happened in Rwanda was the same. Kagame controlled the situation. They cleaned up the massacre sites. They even dug up bodies or they brought skeletons to some places and they brought the media in and they said, see what those Hutus did. And, of course, Human Rights Watch and Amnesty played a part in this, but some of the people that were doing the so-called human rights investigations were actually connected to the Kagame machine. So the whole story was turned upside down, and the way it was turned upside down was using psychological operations. What's a psychological operation? A psychological operation today is convincing the American public that the financial situation is under control. That's a psychological operation. A psychological operation is convincing black people in America that through these so-called non-government organizations that are dealing with the inner city, we're going to bring justice to the inner cities where black people have been subject to economic violence for decades. That's a psychological operation. And that's exactly what happened in Rwanda. And Kagame, the president, in 1990 was actually at a place called Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and he was studying under the Pentagon psychological operations. And this is a very refined, you might call, career, the study of psychological operations, because it goes way back to World War I, it goes back to the Civil War, it goes back to certainly Goebbels under the Nazis, and it goes under what we did in Vietnam to cover up the Phoenix program, and how the American press covered up the atrocities against black people under the, you know, the COINTELPRO programs in the 1960s and 70s against the Black Panther Party and the American Indian Movement. And you did it by blaming the victims. You blame the victims and you accuse them of being the killers. You accuse the black guy who's got a rifle protecting his family of being responsible for mass murder. And you inflame the psychology of the white, affluent white public to believe that they're under attack, when in fact it's quite the other way around. The system is under attack against people of color everywhere, and the psychological operation is to convince the victims, convince people the victims are the killers and the killers are the victims, and that's what happened in Rwanda.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's a totally different slant that the media puts out there.
I forgot to finish the point about these two professors from Maryland. They went over there to Rwanda and started getting access. What they did was they were able to get access to research documents that none of us have been able to get access to. The only people that get access to some of these documents are the International Criminal Tribunal on Rwanda defense attorneys, and they have a right to them because a defense is a defense. And some of the information that they found was, for example, what they determined after 10 years, they just published a story called What Really Happened in Rwanda. And what they determined after 10 years of this research was, first of all, you can't ask any questions in Rwanda or you're going to be targeted. They were targeted, and they didn't like being targeted. Here's a couple of affluent white American professors who went into Rwanda thinking they were going to do this great academic study, and suddenly they were under attack. And a couple of American, you know, an American white guy from affluent society doesn't like being under attack by its own system. So suddenly they started to fight back, and they started to ask these deeper questions, what really happened? And they came to the conclusion that there was no way that all those Tutsi people were killed. The propaganda system that sums up these 100 days Tutsis killing Hutus, that sums up these 100 days Hutus killing Tutsis with machetes, says between 800,000 and 1.2 million Tutsis were killed. That's a standard fact you will see in almost every story you look at about genocide in Rwanda. 800,000 Tutsis killed in 100 days. The fact is, these guys came up with the conclusion that there weren't that many Tutsis in Rwanda. There may have been as many as 300,000 Tutsis killed. And so if there were 800,000 to 1.2 million people killed, who were the other 500,000 to 800,000 people who were killed? And the answer is they were Hutus. So if the Hutus, majority Hutus, if all those Hutus were killed, who actually committed genocide if we're, you know, going to believe the story that the Hutus were committing genocide?
Right.
So it all falls apart. And these guys, after their 10 years, they produced this this body of information and documentation, which shows that there's a lot of really serious hidden questions, big questions about the hidden truth about Rwanda. And after 10 years, they've given up, and they're moving on to something else. And some of us are still at it, trying to bring the truth out about what really happened, because this is the truth in the Congo. The Rwandan government today is massacring people left and right and accusing the victims of being the killers and getting away with absolute murder because they're involved with the Pentagon. And we could talk about how deeply the Pentagon is involved in Uganda, Rwanda, and the Congo.
That's a great question. I was just about to ask you that. Like, what binds Rwanda, Uganda, Sudan, Congo together in terms of AFRICOM, which is, you know, basically the guys that the Pentagon puts on their presence there? And also, like, if you could also follow up and talk about these military exercises that the Pentagon has been conducting throughout Africa in parts like Gabon, which I know you've been to, and you did a very detailed report earlier this fall on Gabon and Omar Bongo. But how deep is AFRICOM in Africa right now, as we speak, December 14th, 2009?
Well, it's unfathomable. The AFRICOM is running hundreds and hundreds of missions across Africa at this very moment. There's probably in 2009 alone, there was probably somewhere between, I would, guesstimate 500 to 1,500 covert operations across Africa. And, you know, some of these will never know what happened unless people from the special forces come forward and say, I was responsible for that. I did this here or there. Some of the bloodshed that's being attributed to different governments or different militia groups is being committed by these AFRICOM covert operations forces in Darfur, in Sudan, for example, in Somalia. Since 1985, the Pentagon has been training the Ugandan forces. And just in the last, when we marched into the Congo in 1996, the Pentagon set up these huge listening stations, you know, satellite communication systems and big radar dishes, et cetera, in the islands between Rwanda and Congo, Idwe Islands in Lake Kivu. This was seen, and there were white special forces on the ground who saw this. They set up these listening stations in Uganda, and they used C-130s to ship the troops into Uganda and to ship the weapons into Uganda. We're talking about black special forces who speak the local languages sometimes, but not always. They're clearly American forces. They've been sighted on the ground, and they marched across the Congo with the Rwandans and Ugandans in 1996, and they were certainly there in 1994 going into Rwanda as well. And then they've been on and off in and out of the Congo since then in secret operations. But since January of this year, the AFRICOM has openly – well, of course, AFRICOM was just created in the last 2 years. The Pentagon used to run its Africa operations out of CENTCOM and EUCOM. EUCOM is European command, and CENTCOM is a central command. But they've created a special, you know, Africa command because the Africa military operations are so huge and vast at this point. So we're talking about, at this very moment, bases, what they call lily pad bases all across Africa where the AFRICOM has, the Pentagon has created these mutual security arrangements with other governments to be able to fly in their troops or fly in their military equipment and fly out on these so-called lily pad bases. The AFRICOM is launching unmanned aerospace vehicles, Predator drones, killing machines, you know, operated by some soldier in some joystick compartment somewhere off-site. And this is happening in Afghanistan and Iraq. It's become a big issue in Afghanistan recently because they've been using them in Pakistan as well. But they're launching these UAVs, unmanned aerospace vehicles or Predator drones, out of the Seychelles Islands, which are over by Madagascar off the coast of Tanzania and off the coast of Kenya. They're targeting Somali people. They're targeting people in Sudan. They're targeting other installations in Sudan. They're operating them out of Djibouti, the little state up between Ethiopia and Somalia. They're operating them out of Ethiopia, where we have covert operations bases. And you can find information about this. If you search on Ethiopia Pentagon, you'll find the different operations that are publicly visible. And, of course, if you look at AFRICOM's propaganda, everything that they say is, we're bringing democracy to Africa. We're bringing peacekeeping to Africa. We're working in humanitarian operations in Africa. And then they show pictures of American soldiers holding little black babies and building schools. And this is nothing like the reality. The reality is operations that are called snatch and grab, terrorist operations, sending troops in to perform all kinds of secret operations under SOCOM, which is the Special Operations Command, which is also part of AFRICOM, of course, because the SOCOM works with all the different commands, but it's over and above AFRICOM on a certain level. But the bases that we're using currently, the American government has pumped millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars, and I don't know how many billions that would be, but billions of dollars into Ethiopia, Uganda, and Rwanda over the last 10 years to create these massive military entities that serve American power and British power and Israeli power in the region. And today, for example, AFRICOM is operating across the border. They're training troops in Ethiopia. They're training people in Uganda. They're training troops in Rwanda at several bases. They're shipping in military equipment left and right. In my story, I point out that they shipped in these outboard motors, Evinrude outboard motors, to put on these little amphibious launch craft that travel across Lake Kivu. They're operating a base out of Kisangani in Oriental Province in the eastern Congo. They're connected to Kabila in the president of Congo on the western side. I mean, they're all over the place. They've got cooperative arrangements off of Diego Garcia, this little island off of Somalia out in the Indian Ocean. They've got cooperative military bases the bases off the far western coast of Africa, and I can't think of the particular islands that. It's a two-name island, but a big base there. They've got cooperative arrangements with Gabon, and they've got training programs going on. I mean, we're talking about massive, massive operations at this very moment, some of which are, you know, involved in bloodshed, as have happened in the Congo. So from January, as soon as Obama took power, they launched these operations in Congo with the Congolese government of President Joseph Kabila against the so-called rebels in the Congo, in the eastern Congo. And that's not the story that I've recently published. The story that I recently published, again, is about the rebels in the western Congo. But in the east, you've got the same scenario. Blame the victims and promote the killers. And that's exactly what's happening. The people doing the killing include the forces that are connected to AFRICOM and the United Nations' so-called peacekeeping mission in Congo. And this has been well documented. Human Rights Watch today just released recently released a report that's in the press today saying that the United Nations' so-called peacekeeping mission in Congo needs to disengage from its support of the current Congolese forces against these so-called rebels. And who are the rebels? The rebels in Congo, in some cases, are just Congolese people fighting against the takeover of their country by these foreign armies, Rwanda, Uganda, United States. And sometimes they're the refugees that have flooded out of Rwanda in 1994, fleeing the current government in power. And the government in power in Rwanda has been killing people left and right inside Rwanda as well as outside. You know, it's a really ugly scenario. And as I say, it's hidden from the American public by giving these rewards to Kagame, who flies into Boston University and gives a speech about stopping genocide and how the American government and all of us, meaning you and me and all the other Americans, how we stood by and let genocide happen in Rwanda. We should be ashamed of ourselves, and we have, therefore, no license to talk about anything in Africa because we should have stopped genocide and we didn't. And that's how twisted this scenario is.
And he was recently, I mean, how long ago was he in, did he fly into Boston?
Kagame comes and goes from the United States all the time. He spoke down in Houston at Baker Institute, named after Baker, former Senator Howard Baker, who was also on the board, by the way, of the Barrick Gold Corporation, which, of course, has operations in eastern Congo as well as six other African countries. And he has, for example, Ben Affleck has been the famous Hollywood actor, has been known to take Paul Kagame's children out to baseball games, to Red Sox games. And Affleck has been into Rwanda where he's investigating investment opportunities. And Affleck, of course, flew into the eastern Congo, and then Anderson Cooper 360 did a story about it and how wonderful Ben Affleck is to try to help these people in the Congo, and that's white supremacy. You know, Angelina Jolie, Ben Affleck, the other guy from Good Will Hunting, whose name I can't – Matt Damon. And then Jessica Lange. These are all the white supremacy that covers up what's really happening in eastern Congo. All those people have been over there and all have participated in selling the so-called humanitarian sector, which is just big business, like, for example, CARE and Save the Children. So it's an ugly scenario, but the bottom line is that anybody who reads the Western press on anything is getting, absolute indoctrination. But people are unwilling to stop reading the New York Times. They think they get some information out of it. It makes them smarter. They can uphold their conversation when they sit down at a glass of wine in New York or whatever, This is fascism. And it's really, really ugly because we're talking about over 10 million people killed in the Congo since 1996, 1,000 people a day in eastern Congo today, and nobody's listening.
And would you refer to what the U.S. is doing right now as nothing less than neocolonization?
I refer to it as genocide.
Genocide.
In against different groups of different populations. Genocide, the best book on genocide is the one by Ward Churchill, A Little Matter of Genocide. And in this book, Ward Churchill makes it clear that back in 1945, when the Genocide Convention was written by the United Nations, first it was gutted. The first thing they did was remove the guy who wrote it. His name was Raphael Lemkin. He was a Polish jurist. He wrote the Genocide Convention back in 1945 or 1946, and he handed it over to the United Nations, and he said, here, we need to do this because the Nazis have just had, done this nasty thing against the Jews in Germany. Well, the United Nations and the American government and the British government, they looked at this document, and they said to themselves, oh, my goddess, if we implement this, we're immediately going to be charged with genocide and war crimes, because that's what they did. So they gutted it. The United Nations gutted it. They removed Raphael Lemkin. And they institutionalized a form of, understanding about genocide, which has very little teeth. And it makes it such a narrow definition of genocide that we see it applied narrowly today instead of universally to apply to all these cases of genocide against people of color. The Hawaiian people. It's going on at this very moment. Native Americans. The Penan people in Malaysia. The Hutus and Tutsis in Rwanda. The people of Somalia. I mean, all these different ethnic groups. The people of Japan were subject to acts of genocide. I mean, what is it if you drop an atom bomb and kill off how many people? And that's not genocide? Genocide is the targeting of an ethnic group or even one member of an ethnic group. And you got to look at the official language and you got to look at the real language and see how it actually applies to all of these other cases. But the system and the academics that are in power today, you know, the academic system in America has to be sure that, well, I've earned a PhD on genocide, so therefore I'm legitimized to talk about genocide, and you don't know what you're talking about. I mean, this is fascism. It's exactly what happened under Hitler, except we have a different face on it, you know. It's called democracy.
Right.
And it doesn't matter how many Africans we get out of the way. That it's still going to come down to this guy named Walter Kansteiner, who was National Security Council under William Jefferson Clinton, and who in 1996 helped organize the overthrow of the government of Mobutu in Congo, and then ends up on the board of directors of a company called Moto Gold, which happens to be mining the gold in the place where all the bloodshed has occurred in northeastern Congo. I mean, what do people need to understand this equation of killing?
Definitely right. Keith, what can you tell us about about the role that and also kind of like what Operation Thunder Lightning was, and you know, what role did the U.S. play towards the use of satellites in terms of, you know, feeding that information to the Ugandan military, and I think the Rwandan military, you know, was involved as well. But you know, to get this character, and maybe you can tell us who this character is, Joseph Kony, who is, you know, allegedly been committing these atrocities in, you know, northeast Congo as well as in northern Uganda.
Sure. It's another perfect example of turning the world upside down and selling it to the American public, who then go Google Gaga every time they see this guy's name. So that's what you happen. You mention the name Joseph Kony, and anybody who's read The New Yorker or Atlantic Monthly or Marie Claire or Vogue, because they carried these stories in Vogue, for example, and Vanity Fair especially, the Vanity Fair story about Joseph Kony made him look like this, you know, nasty guy over in Africa who just goes around recruiting children, stealing them from their villages in the middle of the night, and using the cross, meaning Jesus and the Bible, to convert them into these fanatical little Christian fanatics. So that's the story that you see in the propaganda. The people doing all the killing in Uganda, for example, are Joseph Kony and his Lord's Resistance Army, the LRA, the Lord's Resistance Army. Those are the bad guys. And the good guys in this equation, of course, are President Museveni and the United States and the good Christians. Well, the fact is somebody supports this guy named Joseph Kony, and since 19, I don't know when he began, but it's basically a rebel faction supported by powerful players from the outside who serves to create chaos in the corner of northwestern Uganda and northeastern Congo and southwestern Sudan, where those three states come together. You've got this guy, Joseph Kony, running around with the Lord's Resistance Army. And whenever there's a problem over there, they blame it on him. Now, he's not a nice guy. I mean, he's clearly recruited children, but so has AFRICOM. I mean, we recruit children every day in American colleges and high schools. These are uneducated young adults who don't yet have a great awareness of how the world works and who should fix it or anything other than the American system, which they've grown up indoctrinated under. I mean, that's what we would call, you know, the recruiting of uneducated young people. So if anybody's responsible for child soldiers, the United States is. But instead, we blame it on everything on somebody like Joseph Kony. And we use child soldiers as another way to legitimize our going into these areas, either as human rights organizations or as so-called humanitarian organizations or as military institutions to further our agenda of overthrowing the government or controlling the land. So in Uganda, you've got this good versus evil. President Museveni is good. And, of course, I've given you the background on him. In 1980 to 85, he came to power in a bloody civil war. committing massive atrocities in Uganda and has been in power, supported by the system since, and is defined as democracy, and it's a wonderful example of development in Africa and all this other nonsense. And the bad guy is Joseph Kony, who, of course, as I say, shows up in Vanity Fair and recruits children and drugs them, and their eyeballs roll, and they start drooling like the zombies in the movie King Kong, which is just a portrayal. It's just a racist portrayal of African or black people once again. You've got to portray them in a racist way, and you do that by creating the Lord's Resistance Army. So who supports the Lord's Resistance Army? That's the question. And if anybody listening thinks that we can't track, meaning we, the so-called international community, can't track down some guy floating around between Uganda, Rwanda, and Congo and eliminate him, if he's really responsible for these atrocities, they need to think twice about what kind of a world we're living under, because it's very easy to track somebody down with the kind of satellite technology the United States has. So Kony has continued to operate over there, and what he does is he creates chaos, but not nearly as much chaos as the government of Uganda, and again, the press blames everything on him. So he serves as an agent allowing the government of Uganda to send in their own troops, meaning government troops, who commit atrocities up in these regions, and then they blame it on the Lord's Resistance Army. In 1996, 97, 98, the government of Uganda had rounded up some 1.2 to 2 million people, and they're mostly Acholi people, in northwestern Uganda, and they force them onto these internment death camps. And they are absolute death camps. And the government of Uganda has committed atrocity after atrocity against these Acholi people. They use the Lord's Resistance Army to justify this by claiming that the LRA is coming in and taking children and all this other nonsense, which, of course, the LRA is responsible for some, but not everything. It's like saying that the United States in Iraq is responsible for none of the killing, and the Iraqis are doing all the killing. You know, that's the equation we get from the LRA thing.
Yeah.
So the government of Uganda is meantime exploiting the land, getting the people out of the way. And what's going on up there? What's going on up there on the Congo side and on the Uganda side and on the South Sudan side is oil. Big American, Canadian, Australian corporations connected to the oil. In that area, it's all been mapped out in massive concessions. There's also some gold. And there's also the whole play between the war in Darfur, and I use the word war, not genocide, the war in Darfur involving the United States, involving AFRICOM, involving our proxy soldiers, which are coming from Uganda and Rwanda, trained by U.S. Special Forces, who are committing massive atrocities and depopulating Darfur. And then, of course, blaming everything on those nasty Arabs. The government of Sudan. This is exactly what happened in Rwanda from 1990 to 1994. That's been going on in Darfur since 2003. But before that, we had this equation with South Sudan, which has got a lot of Christians in it. And we've been, since 1990, we've been funding and arming the Sudan People's Liberation Army, which is not a liberation army in any sense of the word. It's just another power faction backed by the Pentagon. And so today, the United States basically controls South Sudan. And we've basically created an autonomous state. In the near future, meaning within the next year, it'll be voted to become an autonomous state of South Sudan. That happened through the United States' covert war in Sudan from 1990 to the present. Now, Joseph Kony plays into this. Eastern Congo plays into this because, as I said, there's the raw materials, there's the gold in Eastern Congo, there's the diamonds, there's the oil and the natural gas. And then also in southwestern Sudan up there, there's some uranium mines and some copper mines that Israel wants, for example. And Kony floats around between the three states and serves as the perfect justification for AFRICOM to send in troops. And that's what Operation Lightning Thunder was. In December of last year, January of this year, the Pentagon sent in Ugandan troops with Pentagon backing, and they committed atrocities after atrocity in Congo as they supposedly tracked down the Lord's Resistance Army. And then the media stepped in and blamed everything on the Lord's Resistance Army. And as I say, the Lord's Resistance Army is not a nice entity. You know, they're a bunch of fanatical killers. But somebody backs them, somebody arms them, and somebody allows them to serve as the justification for the expansion of American military power in the region, which means marching across the border into Congo, into South Sudan, And this, of course, brings in the government of Chad, and it brings in the government of Sudan, and it brings in the government of Uganda, and the government of Central Africa Republic. And on a certain level, it's very simple, but we don't get any of this information. We get a far more simplistic picture that the Lord's Resistance Army is committing atrocities, and we need to eliminate them. And what does this do in the American propaganda system? It's the same thing in Eastern Congo. We whip up the idea that Eve Ensler, the woman who produced the Vagina Monologues, is in Eastern Congo, and she's a feminist, and we trust her, and she's out demanding that we stop the rape against Congolese women, and we do that by sending our money to CARE and Save the Children in the United Nations. And meanwhile, the government of the United States, this fascist military dictatorship with a bunch of fascists in Congress, sitting around making decisions, they pass some legislation which makes it possible for America to expand its power in the Eastern Congo through something having to do with the rape of women in the Congo. This is just another instrument of American power. And it's the same with the Lord's Resistance Army. The propaganda system demonizes the LRA, and it justifies, therefore, the American government passing some legislation which convinces the American public that we're wonderful and we need to help the people of Uganda and Congo and Sudan by stopping the LRA. So the American public stands up and says, we need to stop these atrocities. We're wonderful, we're good, we're democratic, and we're humanitarian. We demand that the government of President Obama or Bush, doesn't matter who's in power, send in AFRICOM and stop these atrocities, when in fact, we're rather like the fire department. We've started the fire, and now we're being called to send in the troops to put the fire out. And we're not going to put the fire out anyway. So it's a really twisted picture, and the propaganda system creates this picture. It basically turns the American thinking mind to mush. You know, few people really know the deeper realities of any of this.
Right.
And it's offensive, you know?
Yeah, definitely. One thing, since, you know, you've went back to the Congo, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is that that I found very interesting in your report is that it mentioned that and I guess you can fill our listeners in on the acronym, but CNDP troops were wearing FARDC uniforms and so forth, and going into you know, various parts of the Congo and committing atrocities. How are you able to acquire that information? And if you can, you know, explain to listeners, you know, what FARDC is and what CNDP are and the significance of them wearing a different uniform and what kind of confusion that, you know, that has caused, you know, everyday
folks in
Congo.
Sure. The answer to part of that question is I get a lot of Congolese people love my work. They read it. They can't believe that I'm saying what I'm saying. There's a lot of Congolese people in the Congo who don't have access to this kind of information, and they learn by reading what somebody like me produces. So I get emails all the time telling me about this and that and this and that, and then I check it out and I find out, okay, well, that's true. And then I look at somebody and I say, well, I'm sorry, but, you know, your information is pretty biased. You're part of a political organization. I don't say this to them directly, but sometimes it's very biased, and it's clear that there's some interest behind it. So the key is to figure out what are the interests, you know? What are the interests? What are the diamond interests coming out of New Jersey? What are the plantation interests coming out of New Jersey or coming out of New York or Tel Aviv, you know? And then figure out, you know, what information is real and what isn't. So at this point, I have some sources in Congo on the east and in the center of the country as well as in the capital who send me out reports, and some of these sources are very deeply connected to the current governments, and some of these sources are giving me first information of the kind of decisions that are being made or the kind of events that are occurring that just there's no access to that information otherwise, you know.
Right.
So I look at it, I filter it, and I try to figure out, you know, check it with other people and figure out what's real and what's not, and then produce what I do my best to produce is an accurate report about what's really happening, and that's what I hope this one is. So you mentioned these acronyms. You know, part of the whole acronym game is to keep the American public confused. One of the ways that multinational corporations and the Pentagon work is to, as, for example, they changed the name of the School of the Americas. As Americans became familiar with the School of the Americas as this institution training terrorists in Latin America, you know, coming right out of the American military, the Pentagon decided to change its name and make it sound more familiar. So then it makes it difficult to explain who they really are. It's the same thing with all these acronyms in the Congo. You've got something like 29 militias that occurred in northeastern Congo in the last 3 years alone. The FNI, the FVRI, the CNDP, the RCP Goma, the RCP DK, the GALMNOP. You know, I mean, it's just nonsense. It's, it's just nonsense to confuse the American public and to confuse people in the Congo as well. But the fact is, the CNDP, this organization out of Rwanda, it's just another Rwandan, meaning the current government of Rwanda, Rwandan military entity, militia in the eastern Congo that rose up under a general named Nkunda. And Nkunda came right out of the Rwandan military. He claimed to be Congolese. It creates a smokescreen which lets the media paint the picture that what's really happening in eastern Congo is about Congo instead of the truth, which is Rwanda. Rwanda's in the Congo, been in the Congo. It's trying to take control of the eastern Congo, and it does that by creating different militias, changing their names all the time. And, you know, of course, you've also got on the ground, you've got different entities. Just like, imagine gangs in New York, or a better analysis would be the mafia in New York, how they have families, and families fight against each other. They fight about turf. They fight about resources. They fight about killings. And they have retaliatory killings. You know, that's exactly what goes on with these mafioso gangs in eastern Congo, because it's all about money. And Rwanda's interest is all about this money. Control of the Congo is about controlling the resources, controlling the money, control the land. You control the land, you control everything. That's why we, you know, decimated Native Americans. So the goal is to create these militias that will serve Rwanda's interests in the Congo, but make them look like they're Congolese. And then the press and the media, of course, you get somebody from the New York Times who comes in there and just plays absolutely stupid, can't think for themselves, and never learn. That's the problem with the New York Times journalists. They can't seem to learn. No matter how much they get presented with the truth, they can't seem to learn anything. You know, this is really white supremacy.
Right.
So the militias in the eastern Congo, like the CNDP, they are actually Rwandans. They're very heavily Rwandan. And they're Rwandan soldiers who've donned uniforms that make them look Congolese. And with the current rebellion, the situation in Rwanda has gotten, the situation in Congo has gotten so bad for the president, Kabila, that he can't trust his Congolese troops. The Congolese National Army is the FARDC, the Congolese, the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, Armed Forces, AF, so it's FARDC, Force Army Democratic Republic of Congo. The FARDC is the National Army, and Kabila, who's a Tutsi, who's a Tutsi or connected to Kagame, the president in Rwanda, he's a Rwandan agent, he's sold out his country, and the people, including the military, don't want to work with him, they won't work with him, they won't serve his killing interests. So in the recent rebellion, for example, when Kabila sent out the National Army to suppress this rebellion, the people defected. The soldiers from the National Army defected to the rebellion side. Suddenly, Kabila is faced with a rebellion where his own soldiers are joining the rebellion. So what did he have to do? He has to bring in troops from the outside. This is exactly what the American military will do. It won't use locals in a place because locals will end up killing local people that they know. It brings in mercenaries. It brings in outsiders. And that's the best way to divide and conquer, and that's what the U.S. military does.
Right.
And so in this recent rebellion, the Kabila government brought in these Rwandans, dressed them up as Congolese forces, and sent them out to fight against the rebels up in this place called Dongo in the west. And so the people suddenly faced with these, what they saw were clearly Rwandans wearing Congolese uniforms, were outraged, and it just spurred more people to join the rebellion. But what I reported now, which is a week old, was that this rebellion was spreading. But at this very moment, the rebellion is under massive attack from foreign forces, including probably Algerians who've been flown in by Kabila, clearly with the knowledge of AFRICOM, and they're fighting against these rebels. And the Rwandans that were flown across the country from Rwanda also clearly with the knowledge of AFRICOM, fighting against these Congolese rebels. And the rebels, the Congolese people, just don't like Rwanda, and they don't like Rwanda's occupation, and they've seen more than 15 years of absolute terrorism in their country because of Rwanda. And so Kabila, the president, is now under siege on several fronts, but he's fighting back very fiercely with these foreign, as I say, mercenary and occupation forces, including AFRICOM. And, of course, the United Nations. The United Nations is on the side of the government of Congo today because, you know, the Congo government has been validated as this legitimate government. The reason they're validated is because they're given all the big contracts to all these American and European and British corporations over Chinese corporations, over Arab interests, and in support of Israeli interests. And, for example, one of the big Israeli diamond dealers in the Congo is this guy named Dan Gertler, and I've written about this extensively. And Gertler's diamond interests connect right into the White House, and they connect right into New York law firms. You know, very powerful guy. And that's what Kabila is upholding. He's upholding this capitalist system. He's upholding the system that makes it possible for there to be 15 years of war, even when you have a $1 billion a year so-called peacekeeping operation. And 50% of that so-called peacekeeping operation goes to pay organizations like Lockheed Martin, number one, you know, manufacturer of weapons of mass destruction on the planet. And Lockheed Martin has some of the airplane military contracts in the United Nations mission in the Congo. And as I said, $1 billion a year since 2001, that's big business, and it's big business for Lockheed Martin. And so the goal is, you know, you don't want to stop the war. You want to keep it running. The more it runs, the more business people make.
Exactly.
And this involves a lot of big, big, big business, you know.
Right.
And it doesn't matter how many Congolese people die, just like it doesn't matter how many people in Detroit in the suburbs die because the system isn't going to give them health care.
Exactly right. Exactly right. What can folks do on this end to try to help the people of Congo seek justice? Like what? What are some of the more tangible ways that this the average concerned, like truly concerned U.S. citizen can do to help, you know, bring justice for people in Congo?
Well, I would say it's the same thing we all need to do to bring justice to people in Afghanistan and Iraq and Philippines at this moment, and Diego Garcia and Haiti, where the U.S. is all over these places. And that is to, first of all, seriously educate oneself by absolutely shutting off the mass media, the Western media system. You can't read the New York Times once and think that you're getting something that's truthful. It creates a framework of understanding or misunderstanding, of disinformation. But people continue to consume it. They continue to pay for it. They don't support freelance independent journalists like me. You know, and people don't have to support me. There's plenty of independents out there that need support as well, but bottom line is if they're dumping their money into these false gods, then, you know, we're always going to have a false system of terrorism. So Friends of the Congo is a good non-government organization. It's truly non-government, and Friends of the Congo is working for the people of the Congo. And this is not to be confused with an organization called Raise Hope for the Congo. That's white supremacy. Raise Hope for the Congo and the Enough Project and STAND, Students Taking Action Against Darfur Now, and the International Crisis Group. These are all funded by a think tank called the Center for American Enterprise. And the Center for American Enterprise was founded by Bill Clinton's former chief of staff, Panetta. And they're all over the media, and they're all over campuses, college campuses, and they present the front of an organized anti-apartheid movement to help the Congo or to help Darfur or to help Uganda. And it's a complete disinformation campaign which channels public sympathy for the people of Congo in such a way as to make sure that anything that people do upholds the interests of the United States and the corporations and does not help the people of Congo. So the Raise Hope for Congo is a farce, and the Enough Project and this guy John Prendergast, when you see them, it's a complete grassroots movement to really disenfranchise the true grassroots movement, which comes from organizations like the Campaign to End Genocide in Uganda Now, or CEGUN, C-E-G-U-N, and a media that people could support, for example, is the one out of New York City, or yours, for example. Milton Alamadi out of New York City is the editor, like Black Star News.
Yeah, definitely.
Great source of information. And the same thing with Friends of the Congo. It's a truly non-government organization, and there's several projects there people can support. People can support Friends of the Congo, and then Friends of the Congo can support independent research so that we can get, you know, these kinds of stories out. And people can visit my website, you know, and find in my stories there's footnote after footnote that give true sources that people can look at for better information about these stories. But the bottom line is, you know, people don't want to make a change in their life in such a way that it really makes a difference. They want to be able to give $20 to CARE, meaning the organization CARE International, who also gets their funding from Lockheed Martin. And then they can absolve themselves, their conscience of having to do anything. You know, the bottom line is that we're being assaulted on so many fronts, it's really hard to ask people to take action to help the people of the Congo. But as one of my, you know, most important teachers, Dr. Enoch Page, would say, are you going to sacrifice your children to save your body? I mean, when do we stand up and help the people of Congo, if not now?
Right. And Keith, how can, you know, before we, you know, before we get off air, I wanted to know if you could, you know, touch on a couple of things. How can people get in contact with you if they just wanted to, you know, they've been inspired by anything that you said and they may be interested in possibly bringing you to do one of your amazing multimedia presentations on the, you know, the things you've covered in, on this show and so much more. Or just if they just want to kind of just stay in contact with you
sure,
in terms
fine.
Of picking your brain, your website, and also if you could touch on your books project that you have going with in terms of trying to provide books to a library in Congo and how they might be able to donate quality, you know, non-American propaganda books to your campaign.
Sure. The first thing would be the Congo Books Project. Of course, as you pointed out, non-American, non-propaganda books. People have to, you know, the goal that I have is to send books into Congo, and now I've sent in over 300 really important books. These are books like Amos Wilson's The Falsification of African Consciousness or The Little Black Book by Malcolm X, you know, stuff that people really need. But there's plenty of good literature that could be sent in, and there's plenty of other stuff that could be sent in as well, but none of this propaganda garbage. That's the last thing they need. And it's difficult to send the books in. So, you know, if people want to participate in that project, they could contact me. People can contact me through the best thing to do would be to go to this new website that we're putting up called Conscious Being Alliance. It's consciousbeingalliance.com, one word. And that link, that website has links to my other two websites, both of which have ways to read information. For example, allthingspast.com. The link is there on Conscious Being Alliance, and there you can find out how to donate. You can find all these stories about Rwanda and Uganda and Congo and read them and learn the deeper story about, you know, the kind of the reason Africa is in the state it's in. And then people could get in touch if they want to support one of the different projects that I have going on in Africa, including Congo and Mali, and the books project is just one. And again, I say Friends of the Congo needs people's support. There's no reason why everybody listening to the show shouldn't send some money to Friends of the Congo. And I don't work with them. I know their work. They know my work. We're friendly. I used to be on their board of advisors, but I'm not anymore because they got too much flack about that. Anyway, it's a great organization. The guys are honest, and they're doing the right thing. So, but most important, again, I say it, you know, people need to educate themselves about what's really happening and realize that anything they're consuming, from the Nation magazine to In These Times, Harper's, New York Times, et cetera, National Public Radio, most of it is just complete white supremacy.
You're exactly right with that one. Keith, I just want to thank you once again. And, you know, I want to say on behalf of Your World News to listeners, you know, he's a modest guy, you may not say, but, you know, he does need, you know, our help in terms of in-kind donations. This kind of work that he's doing is so vitally important for the movement towards, you know, bringing justice to the people of Congo and so many other places that he's doing work. So definitely visit those websites, including allthingspass.com. And you know, even if it's a buck, $5, $10, you know, make a donation. And if you can't, if you have those quality books, get in contact with him. But Keith, I want to thank you once again, brother, for coming on the program. Like I said, you know, this show is your show anytime, and I just you know, I'm really appreciative for the work that you've done. I really, you know, found the report that you put out very useful, and I sent it to many of my networks, and, you know, they've given me the same feedback. So thank you so much.
And you as well, brother. I know you're doing fantastic work down there, and, you know, the system is totally against you as well, so I totally support what you're doing, and I appreciate you having me on and taking the time to listen to me, and I hope that I was coherent.
Thank you.
I get wrapped up and put out the information sometimes. Keeps coming.
Yeah, definitely. You know, just you know, keep chugging away, and you, like I said, you have our support 100%.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Thank you, and take care. And everybody else, have a blessed week, and keep fighting.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This song probably been done about a million times, but it ain't never been done like mine. We're talking about a million Africans. We're talking about 10 million Africans. We're talking about 100 million Africans. We're talking about the genocide that went down in Rwanda. We're talking about Darfur. We're talking about Sierra Leone. We're talking about a million diamonds. We're talking about the Congo, B. We're talking about a million of our people in prison. We're talking about a million of our people dead, unemployed, homeless, hungry, B. 1 million Africans. 10 million Africans, 100 million Africans.
1 million Africans, 2 million Africans, 10 million Africans, 100 million Africans.
They say we ain't got no right to complain. I just laugh at them. You can have the whips and the chains. I don't hate on them, but hopefully they gonna catch up. I ain't gonna wait on them. Kanye, Lupe, Pharrell, I will skate on them. 1 million black men locked up in prison.
Hold
and
it down.
Think I'm kidding what it is, but I isn't. And if you didn't know, it's just cause you ignorant. Cause pigs lock up motherfuckers just cause of their pigment. That is racial profiling. No, I'm not wildin'. Y'all shuckin' jiving.
Yeah, it's about
grinning and smiling. 1 million people was here before they even came. And ever since they came, they just changed the game. They brought a few million more and then they changed our names. That turn the devil burner, come to burn your shit to flame.
We gon' burn it
1
down,
million
baby.
Africans, 2 million Africans, 10 million Africans, 100 million Africans.
1 million Taino, 1 million Arawak, 10 million more of our people who ain't coming back. 10 million of our people with scars on their back.
Cracker, tell me that it don't matter, but matter of fact, I'm the surprise in the box, I will crack a jack. After that ain't nothing else to do but to holler black.
1 million kids who ain't got no options, either they down with the goons or the
goblins.
1 million Africans, 2 million Africans, 10 million Africans, 100 million Africans. Drop them off here and now you is a Haitian. Drop you off here and now you is Jamaican. 1 million, 10 million, let's bring it back, man. Yes, they are the devil. What's the devil to a
black man?
Nathan, nothing. They ain't saying nothing. We don't need another old white man. Finger on the button, cause the last white man had that type of power. Had 6 million people taking gasoline showers. The Bible told me this world is ours. The meek shall inherit, but that don't mean to be cowards. One stupid white man can knock down 2 towers. Y'all niggas got it backwards. Y'all niggas got it backwards.
1 million Africans, 2 million Africans, 10 million Africans, 100 million Africans.
1 million Wampanoag, 1 million Blackfeet, 1 million Navajo, 1 million Apache, 1 million Iroquois, 1 million Sioux. You done killed about 1 billion people, maybe even 2. We take a nation of millions, hold us back, I thought you knew. And everywhere they go, this is just how they do. Was 11 million Africans living around Soweto. 1 million white folks had them in the ghetto. The ghetto, the ghetto. You all love the ghetto. You talk about it so much, but we ain't seen no bread though.
Breaking more.
I take 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, 4. Build a couple hundred schools, hit you for 4 million more. 1 million Haitians, refugees know the score. Cause you don't want 1 million motherfuckers at your door, man. I am Farrakhan and 1 million man marching. Approach me with caution, 1 million people watching. I do this so often. 1 million places on this earth, but I come from Boston.
1 million Africans, 2 million Africans, 10 million Africans, 100 million Africans.
1 million Africans, 2 million Africans, 10 million Africans, 100 million Africans.
Harry and Dublin came too. We got a long legacy. This is how we do it. Uno the prophet, Nat Turner, devil burner. 1 million Africans. 10 million Africans, 100 million Africans passed through that transatlantic slave trade, the African Holocaust. Don't forget.